Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah, I don't know. It might have been a mistake to play this because Black Cow from Steely Dan is one of my favorites. And I'm tempted to just let this thing roll and just go refill the coffee cup.
I thought we were looking to fill time. It's a Monday morning.
Goodness knows they can do it. They can do it better than I can. Welcome back. It's Monday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Congratulations to Kristen Bry, whose program follows this one on many fine radio stations across Wisconsin, on getting married over the weekend. And not getting her wedding washed out. I know there was a lot of apprehension, shall we say. There was tagging, begging, and pleading of every Milwaukee meteorologist to do something about it, knowing full well they can't. And I guess, according to one of her later tweets, only got a few drops here and there. So congrats to her and many, 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 many decades of happiness in the happily ever after department. In looking at what's happening in, we've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Senate race with Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And I know what you're saying is that, wait, there's that other big race with Tim Michaels challenging Governor Tony Evers. There isn't nearly as much. Tim Michaels hasn't had nearly as much to say as Ron Johnson lately. I think in large part that is planned. He is certainly not as bad as DeSantis in Florida or Mastriano, the Republican gubernatorial nominee in Pennsylvania, in terms of, you know, outright hostility toward the press and blocking them from events. But I do worry that we're getting closer to that point. And I think there simply needs to be a closer examination of what Tim Michaels would do, and whether he is paying lip service to something like democracy, or if he would really protect it or be downright hostile to it. He may be as extreme as Mastriano in Pennsylvania, but he needs to be, you know, I don't know that he has answers like these. These are Mastriano's actual questions to a candidate survey. Is global warming real? Mastriano, it is not. It's fake science, and it's a racket at the academic level. Should gay marriage be legal? Absolutely not. I'm for traditional marriage. It's been like that for 6,000 years. It was the first institution founded by God in Genesis, and it needs to stay that way. Is Islam compatible with the Constitution? Mastriano, it is not. The Constitution was based on Christian Judeo ideals. No, it wasn't. And it's only compatible with that worldview. Guess what? He says, not all religions are created equal. Should gender identity be added to anti-discrimination laws? Mastriano, absolutely not. That's madness. And finally, should LGBTQ couples be allowed to adopt? Mastriano, no. That's it. Just a single word. No tap dancing around it. This is the extreme candidate that Republican voters chose in their Republican primary. They may have that in Tim Michaels, but if he's not getting asked enough direct questions from the media yet, it's harder for voters to know for sure if this is what we're going to get. Why am I not giving him the benefit of the doubt? Because again, we have the record of Scott Walker, who in 2010 never said anything about removing public employees' rights to bargain collectively. And yet that's the first thing he did. And in 2014, poo-pooed the idea that he would somehow go do more union busting legislation, when in fact, one of the very first bills that got rushed through and he signed was so-called right to work legislation that, again, was an attack on union workers. There's just no trust between Republican candidates for governor in Wisconsin and the voters without explicit answers to questions like these and more. So that's why there hasn't been a lot said about the governor's race lately, simply because there hasn't been that level of dialogue with Tim Michaels. So we've been focusing a bit more on the Senate race, in part because Ron Johnson can't help himself, but also because of side stories that affect his race, such as the one that came up late last week about how the National Republican Senatorial Committee, basically the Senate Republicans Campaign Committee, is cutting back big time on spending on ads that would benefit Johnson and Senate Republicans in other states. And there's been more than a little attention focused on the head of the NRSC, and that would be Florida's Senator Rick Scott. Again, a multi-millionaire who had previously served as Florida's governor before winning the election to U.S. Senate. And all of that remains a mystery to me, how he won any election at all when Rick Scott is still on record, I believe, as having pulled off, or oversaw, I guess I should say, the largest Medicare fraud in U.S. history when he was heading, when he was CEO of Columbia HCA. The hospital company was fined nearly $2 billion for Medicare fraud, for doing things like billing Medicare and Medicaid, meaning you and me, the taxpayers, for tests that were not necessary or had not been ordered by physicians. The company attached fake or false diagnosis codes to patient records to increase reimbursement to hospitals. This is all from PolitiFact, by the way, through the Poynter Institute. The company illegally claimed non-reimbursable marketing and advertising costs as community education. And Columbia billed the government for home health care visits for patients who did not qualify to receive them. And yet somehow, Rick Scott, after that massive fine, was elected governor and then Senate. Now he heads up the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, and now they are retreating. And that has some people very unhappy after that $10 million cancellation, because the NRSC had just been reporting record fundraising that topped $173 million so far in this election cycle, according to disclosures by the Federal Election Commission. But the committee has burned through nearly all of it, apparently, and NRSC's cash on hand has dwindled to under $28 million by the end of June. The committee was committed to spend $23 million more on ads, $21 million more on text messages, $12 million to pay off their American Express credit cards, and more. So I guess it really shouldn't be a surprise that you read tweets like this one that says, "I think it's hilarious that the Republicans put Rick Scott, who holds the record for the biggest Medicare fraud in history, in charge of NRSC's campaign funds. They blew through the money, so the GOP is being forced to pull its Senate campaign ads from all the battleground states." This is the party of fiscal responsibility, I think. Isn't that what they still claim that now and then, don't they?
They would like you to believe that that's what they can go by. But here in Wisconsin, we've known for a while, between Foxconn, paying to not have high-speed rail, and everything like that, the Republicans aren't necessarily the party of fiscal responsibility. But the crazy thing is, I've worked on campaigns in the past, Pat. I'm in that world pretty I follow the online campaign world a lot for progressive Democratic candidates. Mm-hmm. And one of the line items of that reporting that you just pointed out, the $21 million spent on the text messaging program, as far as I can tell, that's got to be the most expensive text messaging campaign plan, because all of the campaign experts that I follow and know and I've spoken to about this, they say that they wouldn't be able to burn through $21 million for a texting campaign if they needed to do it for years, let alone just the several months left between now and November. So I truly don't know where this money's going, but Rick Scott has a habit of making money disappear.
And if that's all he did, that would be enough. But Rick Scott fancies himself somewhat of a Newt Gingrich type of person who believes you should be forceful and proactive with a campaign plan. And that would be fine. I mean, Newt Gingrich had his contract on America all those years ago, and they fulfilled some of those threats and carried them through. Rick Scott is doing something similar. Now, again, he's not the Senate Republican leader. That's Mitch McConnell. But as head of the Senate Republicans Campaign Committee, he put together his own plan, saying that this is what he feels Senate Republicans should stand for and get done. And Ron Johnson has complimented him on it. He has said, well, there might be one or two things that I wouldn't do, but he won't say what they are. Ron Johnson won't say explicitly what is in the Rick Scott plan that he wouldn't go along with, keeping in mind that the Rick Scott plan is the one that would put Medicare and Social Security and every other federal program up on the chopping block within 5 years. And at each point, Social Security would have to survive a vote. Medicare would have to survive a vote. Apparently, things in the Defense Department would have to survive a vote. And that means you're always left to the whims of what the last election was, rather than a long-running national promise. I mean, let's take the military, for example. Imagine if that whole thing was on a two-year budget, that every year or every 2 years with each session of Congress, it could be that we have the number of aircraft carriers we have now, or nope, we don't want aircraft carriers anymore, or something similar. It sounds silly, but it's not. If we've learned already this year with the repeal of Roe v. Wade, there is nothing that is unthinkable or unimaginable. And if you're going to put entire programs up, that is so different than the long-range promises and programs that any government should be making in order to have some uniformity, some security, some credibility. It's one of those reasons why I have never been the world's biggest fan of two-year terms. Some would say, well, that just keeps you accountable. Perhaps, but it also means you're always campaigning. You're always making promises, and yet there's no time to keep them. And the only promises you can make are the short-term kind, rather than saying, you know, we're going to make this, say, long-range investment in something. It means that I'm committing that more than 2 years from now, we're going to continue paying for this thing, but it's important, so we're going to do it. That's what leaders do. That's what long-range thinkers do. Short-range is, you know, if that were the case, nobody would own their own home. Nobody would mortgage. A mortgage is that long-term investment that you make. And you don't have to be, you know, mechanically inclined to, I could never put this thing back on my toilet after I took the fill valve off. It's disgusting. I don't know why I still hang on to that. But although, come to think of it, I put the Van Gogh cushion behind me from the immersive art exhibit. Maybe I need to put the toilet valve.
I think it's a wall mount. Yeah, it's almost worthy of a wall mount.
Some people have on them behind the wall, like the people that they interviewed, the guests that they've had. Maybe I just need the props, you know, of house projects and visits and things like that.
I don't think that Coca-Cola Dream World is going to get any better by hanging
I
on
still
a shelf.
Have the bottle in no. case I might change my mind and give it another try. I might.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah, right. Yeah, could put that Coca-Cola bottle up there. My point being, he said, returning back to the main track, is that you have to have leaders in government who make plans for the long run. It's why Social Security has lasted for, what, 87 years now, Medicare and Medicaid, why we don't have the extreme poverty, illness, and death that we once had in the years of the Depression, was having that kind of long-range thinking. The short-term that gives you a Rick Scott also gives you a Rick Scott that by the end, you're not just, you don't have money for the long run, you don't have money for next month. We'll wrap up today's visit after this. You're up north.